Mackie and I often talk about it, and we wonder that you could have had such knowledge of these spiritual matters and such faith to maintain the truth of their existence. But you were right and your faith was not misplaced. Old friend, I thank you again, and God bless you. I am now in a condition of light and suffer very little and realize to a great extent that there is such a thing as the love of the Father, and that it may be mine. I pray and my faith is becoming stronger all the time. The great proof to me, aside from what I see in the condition of other spirits who claim to have this love, is my own change in soul happiness and in desire to progress to the higher spheres, which your band tells me exists, and that I may find my home there if I will only pray more to the Father and let my faith enlarge. To me this love and faith is a new revelation. Of course, when on earth I heard of God's love and of faith, but to me they meant nothing more than the rhapsodies of the enthusiastic religionists, whose emotions had overcome their normal reasoning powers, a will-o'-the-wisp, as it were. But now I know the reality of these things and I 162, I am here, Franklin H. Mackey. I must write just a line to tell you that you are my friend and helper in my darkness and sufferings. I have been much benefited by your advice and the help which your band has given me, and I am commencing to see the light and to know what the love of the Father means to a poor benighted soul who has been in a state of torment. I will not write longer but say that I am so grateful and will never forget. The Paget Messages 1915, find that the emotions are in things pertaining to the soul more certain leaders than other reasoning faculties. I am quite happy at times, and I hope to make such progress in my soul development as to be happy all the time. You are my true friend and I love you as a brother now. Well, they are still in darkness, but have progressed some little. The great disappointment which Harvey experienced when he came over seems to have such a baleful influence on him, that it is almost impossible at this time for him to reach out and try to grasp the truth of the existence of this love. But we are trying to help him, and he is commencing to wonder at our improved appearance and to think that maybe we know what we tell him to be the cause of the change. Mac is still in darkness, and it seems hard for him to awaken to the fact that there can be any other condition that he may have. He is very hard to reason with, and does not seem to have much desire to have his condition change. Well, I will not write more tonight. I saw some spirits writing to you but did not know them, except Jesus. I know him and I could never forget him, for there are none like him in grandeur and beauty and love. So my dear friend, let me again express my gratitude and say with all my heart, that I am your grateful, Hugh T. Daggett. I am here, George W. Harvey. Wait a while until I say something. I want to tell you that Mackie and Taggart have changed so much, that I wonder why they have and I have not. They tell me that it is because they have received the love of God in their souls, and faith in what the beautiful spirits of your band tell them. I hardly know what to think, and I want to ask what you think is the cause. I am a doubting Thomas. Paget answers, well, I have heard what you said and I will try to do as you say. I will do so. And I want to express to you my gratitude for the interest you have taken in me. Your friend, George W. Harvey. I am here, an Axilibis. Let me tell you about the Great Pyramid of Gizeh. I want to do so in detail, as I was its designer, and I built it under the direction of the great Egyptian king, Munibasis the Great, who lived many centuries ago, before Ramesses, who is credited with its construction. I 163, know that mankind has no records which tell of the reign of this monarch, but such records did exist, and in them was contained the history and the description of the occasion which called for the building of this great pyramid. These records were destroyed long before the present extant histories of the world were written, long before the Book of the Dead was written, and long before any of the present kingdoms of the earth had their beginnings. Centuries and centuries have passed since that time, and no man has knowledge of what was then the condition of the human race, or, as I should say, speaking for myself, of the race that inhabited the region of what you call the Lower Nile. We were a race of a great intelligence, and of what you would now describe as a wonderful civilization. Many of our arts and sciences disappeared from Earth and have never been rediscovered, and may never be, for that race no longer has communication with the present race. I came tonight because I saw pass me by wonderful spirits of light and beauty, evidently bent on some great mission, and I followed them and found myself with you. Listening to the communications which they gave you, I found that there came to me a desire to write also. Well, as I listened, I soon saw that the communications were written in a language different from my own, and that you understood only that language and that I must write in that language to make myself understood. So I commenced at once to learn it, and I learned it in the short space of time that I listened to them in their communications. This may seem impossible to you, but I can read the thoughts of spirits and men without difficulty, and as all thoughts in the spirit world require no language such as you understand, I soon found that I could clothe my thoughts in your words as I am doing now. Well, I know it may not be very satisfactory to you, but it is true, and I cannot more clearly explain it so that you may comprehend it. Well, I have diverged or digressed from my intention of telling you what the design of the Great Pyramid was, and I find that I have written too long to attempt it now, as this is my first effort at writing. So I will postpone it until later, but I will come and give you the explanation. I don't know in years, but when the Egyptian Book of the Dead was written, I had lived as a spirit many thousands of years. I must stop now and say good night, and Anaxilibus. The Paget Messages 1915. I am here, Anabalaxis. I lived on the last continent of Atlantis. I was a ruler of the people who lived on this submerged continent, and I come to tell you of its history, but your wife says that you are too tired to write more tonight. I will come again sometime and tell you the wonders of that unfortunate land. So good night, Anabalaxis. I am here, Helen. Well, you have had some wonderful communications tonight, and I know that you are somewhat mystified and have some doubts as to the genuineness of the writers, but they were the spirits who wrote the communications, and they said that they are just who they represented themselves to be. The last two looked like very ancient spirits and had wonderful intelligent countenances. But they are not spirits of light and love which the divine love gives to spirits. I suppose that they live in some of the planes of the sixth sphere. You must not write more. So with all my love, I am your own true and loving, Helen. July 30, 1915. A master in Israel, and yet I did not understand this new birth. How few understood it then and how few now. Oh, the long years that have gone by since Jesus told me that I must be born again to inherit eternal life, and how comparatively seldom this great truth is taught by the churches and the teachers of religious matters. This truth is at the very foundation of mankind's redemption, and until a man receives this new birth, he cannot possibly enter into the kingdom of heaven. Men may claim to have faith in God and believe on Jesus' name and conform to all the essentials and sacraments of the churches, and yet, unless they have this new birth, their faith and works as Christians are vain. This I know from my own experience as well as from the teachings of the Master, and I desire to emphasize, with all the powers that I have, that it is the only important requirement to immortality. The new birth means the flowing into the soul of a man the divine love of the Father, so that that man becomes, as it were, a part of the Father in his divinity and immortality. When this truth comes to a man, he commences to take on himself the divine nature of the Father, and all that part of him that may be 164, called the natural nature, commences to leave him. And as the divine love continues to grow and fill his soul, the natural love and affections for things of the earth will disappear, and as a result he will become at one with the further and immortal. Why don't those who profess to be teachers of Jesus' truths, which are the truths of the Father, and all followers of him, pay more attention to this vital truth? When you shall have received the messages from the Master, I think you will find this truth of the new birth to be the one thing that Jesus will emphasize and reiterate most. It is the most important thing for men not only to hear about and acquiesce in their intellectual beliefs, but also to actually experience. I wish that I had understood it when on earth, as I do now. He meant, as no man could see the wind or tell from whence it came or whither it was going, so no man who received this new birth could see the operations of the Holy Spirit or know whence it came. But this latter expression must be modified, because we all know it comes from the Father, but just how we do not know. The Holy Spirit is as invisible as the wind, and yet it is just as real and existing. But men need not trouble their intellects to know exactly what this great power is, for it is sufficient to know that which causes the new birth is the divine love of the Father coming into the souls of men. I must stop, as I have written enough for tonight. So let me subscribe myself a brother who has received the new birth, and a lover and follower of the Master, Nicodemus. August 1, 1959. I am here, George Washington. I was the first President of the United States. I came to tell you that I am a spirit who is now a follower of the Master, and that I have found the love of God, and am an inhabitant of the first celestial sphere, where my home is one of happiness and love. I am not so much interested in the affairs of earth as I once was, and I do not attempt to influence the men who are at the head of public affairs as I did a few years ago. Now I see that the things of the earth are only temporary and need not the oversight of spirits who have advanced to the higher spheres, and consequently, I don't at this time take an interest in such matters. But I am interested in the individual souls of men and in their spiritual welfare, and I am doing what I can to, the Paget Messages 1915, help them develop their soul qualities. So when you read that I am advising the rulers of the nation, or others who have to do with the making of its laws or the execution of them, you must conclude that such messages are not from me or in any manner suggested by me. I am now interested in men as individuals, because that welfare exists through all eternity and not for time only, as does the welfare of the nation. Of course, as men become possessed of the higher soul development, the condition and excellence of the nation will be benefited and increased, and men's happiness, both individually and in the aggregate, will be much increased, and will make them more at one with the Father, and as a consequence, the brotherhood of man will be more effective in working good. But the brotherhood of man is not the great object for which men should work or preach. First, let each man receive in his heart this divine love of the Father, and then the true principles which should exist in the brotherhood of man will find their existence, and men not only as individuals but as brothers will find that they will be happier, and devote themselves to serving one another and to causing the greatest good to the greatest numbers. No mere philanthropical desires of men will bring about the great millennium that men look forward to in organizing and fostering what they call the brotherhood of men. Of course, men should endeavor to love one another even if they do not have this divine love in their souls, but such love will not be sufficient to form a brotherhood that will last and grow under all circumstances. Men's desires are not naturally of the kind that unite them together in one great object, and whether material interests or love of power or ambition to extend their territorial or commercial interests come in conflict with this natural love for one another, the natural love must succumb, and as a result war will ensue, and hatred and envy and the desire to overcome one another will take the place of love and brotherhood. Only when men shall get this divine love in their hearts will they be able to overcome these natural desires. So I say, the great and only preachment is the obtaining of a brotherhood of man founded upon the divine love existing in the individual souls. Without this, the brotherhood will be founded on sinking sand, and no stability will make it a thing of lasting existence. I have written enough for my first attempt. As to the present terrible war, I do not see that it had any excuse, much less justification, and the 165 results that will follow are beyond the conception of the wisest statesman. I do not know how or when it will end, but to me it seems that the Allies must prevail, and the Germans and Austrians be compelled to submit to the dictates of their antagonists. But ere the time comes, many a man will become a spirit, and many an orphan and widow will be made to hunger and suffer the pangs of distress. Let men fight if they will, but the truths of the Father will always continue to stand and call for men to recognize and embrace them. So my friend, I must stop. Thanking you for your kindness, I will say good night. Your brother in Christ, George Washington. I am here, John Brown. I was the man who gave his life for the freedom of the slaves and the purification of the nation. So I come to you as a spirit who in the long years since my death has seen the principles for which I fought and died established in the laws of my country, and the principles of freedom and political equality made a part of the economy of your land. I am now a spirit fighting still for truth and liberty, But now my fight is for the liberty of all mankind from the slavery which sin and the greed of men impose upon their fellow men. No man has the right, because of superiority in position or greatness in wealth, to make his fellow man a slave or keep him from enjoying the God-given things of earth. Of course, some men must rule and some must possess the greater riches, but these facts do not justify the ruling ones or the wealthy in treating the subordinate or the poor in a way to make them unhappy, or to prevent them from receiving their just dues in the working of the affairs of their relationship of employer and employee or of governor and governed. Right is right, and the machinations of men will not much longer make the poor and dependent a slave to the rich and independent. Men are awakening to their rights and to the object of their creation by a just God who is no respecter of persons, and soon men will come into their own and peace will reign on earth. I am not what is called a socialist, but a lover of mankind without regard to environments or opportunities. Let the rich treat the poor as brothers, and let the laws be administered for all alike. Religion is a mighty power in the world, and as men come to see that the golden rule of the master, the Paget Messages 1915, is the only one that should govern their actions, one towards the other, peace and prosperity and happiness will come to the inhabitants of the earth. What I say is not a mere dream of an enthusiast, but is the result of what I see will follow the workings of the great spiritual forces which are now combined and working for the salvation of men as never before in the history of the world. And in this great work, love will be the mainstay of the principles that will activate men in their dealings with one another, and when this love shall flow to men with all its fullness and irresistible force, as will do, men will realize a new existence, and the brotherhood of men will become a thing of reality. So I say, let men prepare themselves for this great inflowing of love, for it is coming and will sweep away the evils and trifles that now are influencing the great crime of the centuries. I mean the great barbarous and inexcusable war that is now devastating the whole of Europe. Men may think that the end of the war will see a peace that, because of the horrors and great losses and depletion of men and means, will last for many years, but if peace should depend upon these causes, war would rear its ugly head again before many generations have passed. While the war shall end, the causes of the war will only slumber, and when new generations come, and the ambition and desire for aggrandizement and power shall again work their evil influences upon the hearts and minds of the rulers of the new generations, war will come again. But we hope, and are working to that end, that the love of one for another and the great feeling and realization of the brotherhood of man will so fill the souls of men that those things which cause wars will entirely disappear, and peace will become the lasting condition of both individuals and nations. Liberty and freedom are the great possessions of men even as they are now possessed, with all these feelings of envy and hatred and ambition, but peace and love are the greatest things in all the world, and when men learn this, war will never rear its ugly head again. I must stop now. I am living in the fourth sphere and am comparatively happy, and am much interested in any country's welfare and in the welfare of humanity the world over. I am a worshipper of God and am trying to follow His precepts as I learn them on earth. I am not the possessor of what you call the divine love, but I have a love for my fellow men which enables me to try to help them in every way in my power. 166. I never have troubled myself about the love that you speak of. I know that there are spirits who live in higher spheres than I do, and they seem more beautiful than do I, but I have never sought the reason or troubled myself with knowing why. But as you put the proposition, I will talk to some of these spirits and ask them about this love that you speak of. So I thank you for the opportunity of writing my sentiments on this subject that is so dear to me now, and was when I was on earth. With all my love I will say, good night, John Brown. I am here, Lafayette. I am the Frenchman who was a lover of liberty and soldier of both your country and mine, and who was an aide to your great general and father of his country, I mean Washington. I came because I want to tell you that in the great war that is now going on I am interested, and want to express my opinion as to its causes and its ending. France was not desirous of this war and had made no preparations to struggle against the Germans and had no idea that the Germans would so soon seek to overrun her territory, as Germany professed the greatest friendship for her, but as you know, the German Emperor, without warning and without excuse, hurled his legions into poor Belgium in his endeavor to reach the French capital and possess it before the French nation could make any effective resistance. The Kaiser was anxious to acquire more territory belonging to France for purposes of colonization, and thought that the task would be an easy one. He had no conception that he would have any difficulty in passing through Belgium, neither did he contemplate that England and Russia would join with France in opposing his onslaught. In fact, he thought that he would so quickly succeed in capturing Paris and obtaining what he desired that these other nations would not have time to take any part in the conflict. But as you know, little Belgium checked his advance and held him at bay until England was enabled to take such action as embarrassed him to such an extent that he has never yet succeeded in gaining the object of his desires, and let me say, he never will. I will not further review this phase of the matter. In the end, Germany will be defeated and her Kaiser will be killed and his family disappear from the Paget Messages 1915, the face of the earth as a ruling family. Germany will become in a few years after the war a republic, but its territory will be much reduced. Before the war ends, the Allies will invade Germany and Berlin will become invested by them, and they will dictate their own terms of capitalism, and these terms will be such that Germany as a great nation will cease to exist, and will take her place among the republics of the earth as a secondary state, and devote herself to the industries which her natural resources and the capacity of her people will entitle her to. She will never become a great maritime nation, but will be content to exist as a manufacturing and agricultural country. Her people will migrate in large numbers and become swallowed up in the other nations of the world, especially in the South American countries. France will again thrive, and so will her allies, and little Belgium will be taken care of and become an important manufacturing country, with a people much improved in their intellectual acquirements. I say all this, not because I am a Frenchman, but because I can see that these results must flow from causes which now exist, and which will continue to exist until the results that I speak of come about. But the sad thing is that before these results come, many a human will become a spirit and many a happy family will be broken up, and poverty and distress cause much suffering. But such is war, and such a war never was. So my friend, I thought that I would write to you tonight and express my views. I will not take up more of your time. I live in the sixth sphere and have a home of much beauty and many friends in whom I find much happiness and entertainment. I sometimes see him, Washington, but not so often as formerly. He is living in a sphere higher than where I live, and I don't often see him. Our attractions have not continued as you might suppose, and where this attraction does not exist, spirits do not often come in contact with one another. I never thought of that view of the matter, and the next time I meet him I will make the inquiry. I know that he is a more beautiful spirit than I am, and more beautiful than when he lived close to me in a lower sphere. I have never thought to ask the reason for his improvement, but will do so as you suggest. I sometimes see Napoleon and talk with him, and more often since this war began. He is interested as I am, but he does not seem to think 167 that it will last very long, as he sees a reason why the Allies will soon overrun the German Empire and bring the war to a close. I cannot write more. Your friend, Lafayette. I am here, Bismarck. Let me say a word. I saw what Lafayette wrote, and I don't agree with him on either proposition. The German Emperor did not bring on this war as the Frenchman said, but it was forced on him. He saw that not only France but England was trying to destroy the great mercantile business which Germany had built up, and that unless he took some means to forestall the efforts of these nations, Germany would lose its commercial prestige and have to submit to the dictates of these rivals. And as a wise emperor and statesman he struck the first blow, sharp and quick, and had it not been for the Belgians he would have reached Paris and accomplished his object. But that little nation of lace makers, as we called them, showed that when home was invaded they could fight, and fight they did, and notwithstanding the fact that I am a German, whose sympathies and desires are all with the Germans, yet I admired the way in which these Belgians fought. Had France such fighters, the Germans would have been out of that country a long time ago, and the German territory would now be invaded. But this is past, and Germany is still in France and will stay there, notwithstanding the efforts that France and England may make to oust them. The end of the war is not yet, and before that end comes, Paris will fall and the terms of peace will be dictated by the victorious Germans, and France will lose some territory, and England will pay an indemnity and make such concessions to Germany that her commerce will be established and grow to such an extent that she will be second to none as a commercial nation. Germany will not cease to be an empire, a stronger and greater one than ever. William will not live long after the war ends, but one of his sons will occupy the throne and his family will reign for years. It will not become a republic, although I know the socialists will make a great effort to bring that about, but they will fail. So I tell you that the French spirit is mistaken, and he will find out his mistake before a great many months have gone by. I don't know what causes he imagines he sees, but if he would see the Paget messages 1915, true causes, he would draw different conclusions as I do. I'm Bismarck, and I am with the German army trying to show its generals the way to accomplish their objects. I must not write more. I live in the second sphere and am trying to find happiness, but this war interferes with my happiness and my progress. Well, I saw you writing, and I saw Washington and Lafayette engaged in writing, and I stopped to listen, and became interested in both the writing and the subject matter. And when Lafayette wrote as he did, I determined to give my views, and hence I wrote. You must excuse my intrusion, but I thought it just to express what I think about the war. I will not take up more of your time. So with my kind regards, I am your friend, Otto von Bismarck. August 3, 1915. I am here, Jesus. My truths are plain and my teachings can be understood by the simple. Any religion which requires the exercise of the mental faculties to an extent greater than what is required in the ordinary affairs of life, cannot be a true religion, because God has designed that all His children shall understand His truths without the necessity of having a highly developed mind. He that runs may understand my teachings, and it will not be necessary for any preacher or teacher to explain them. My language will explain itself. So let not your mind be troubled over the question as to whether only the mentally developed can understand what I may write. The truths are for all. So with all my love, I am your brother and friend, Jesus. August 5, 1915. I am Samuel the prophet. I want to tell you that I am in a condition to tell you of my existence here in the spirit world and what I know about the truths of the doctrines of Jesus as I have learned them since I became possessed of the divine love which He brought to earth and to the world of spirits. I have lived a great many years in this spirit life, more than you may think from the account of my earth life as contained in the Old Testament, for that book does not state correctly the time when I lived as a mortal. Many thousand years, 168, have gone by since I lived and performed my work as prophet and teacher on the earth, and I have in all these long years learned many things about the spiritual world, and its conditions and laws. In the first place, I am not a spirit who was given over to the evils that men are usually possessed of when they become spirits, because when I lived on earth I was very close to the Father in His thoughts and love. I mean the love which He gave to man at that time. This love, while not the divine love, yet was a love that was sufficient to make men happy when they possessed it free from sin and error and tried to do the will of the Father as they understood that will. Many men thought that they understood this will, when in reality they only knew that which the laws of Moses taught them to be right in the sight of God. But some men were given a deeper insight into the mind and love of the Father to bless and make men happy in their natural love, and consequently were closer to Him, and better understood His will and what was pleasing to Him. I have since my becoming a spirit learned many truths which I did not understand on earth, and which are necessary to know in order to be able to enjoy this love and its fullness. I never, though, possessed this divine love until after Jesus came to earth and showed men and spirits what this love meant, and how necessary it was to obtain it in order to become a part of God's divinity. I do not now see that I was any more in favor of God, as I then possessed only this natural love, than were many others who had the privilege of receiving from His angels the inspirations which came to them at times, and which made them able to tell the inhabitants of earth what was the purpose of God to have them do. I was only a man in the sense that I was only possessed of this natural love and hence, could get no higher in the spiritual world than this natural love would enable me to attain. I am now in a heaven which this divine love has opened up to me, and which enables me to enjoy the great happiness which that love causes all to have, who possess it.